From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, a discussion with a contactee. Here's what's happening. Claims that the active ingredient of the widely used weed killer Roundup can cause cancer have been evaluated by international agencies, U.S. and foreign regulators, and the product manufacturer, agribusiness giant Monsanto. Now a federal judge in San Francisco is conducting his own review during an unusual set of court hearings that began today. It has the big stakes for Monsanto and hundreds of farmers and others who have sued the company. Now the U.S. district judge will spend a week hearing from experts to help decide whether there is valid scientific evidence to support lawsuits' claims that the exposure to Roundup can cause cancer. Now Russia says it has proof that Washington has tried to interfere in its country's upcoming presidential election. The deputy foreign minister there told a leading Russian news agency that the United States has tried to destabilize his country ahead of this month's vote. He claims Moscow has evidence that the U.S. has been trying to interfere with their ballot system. Well, perhaps you've noticed in recent weeks a marked increase in talk about the mounting threats of malicious cyber activity to our national security, intellectual property, critical infrastructure operations, even our election systems. The Justice Department recently announced indictments of 13 Russian organizations and individuals for apparent meddling in the 2016 election. Apparently, the accused sought to wedge divisions in American society largely through social media. At the time, their fake accounts, rumors, incitements went largely unnoticed by users of Facebook and Twitter, among others, because, well, thanks to anonymity, U.S. social media already overflows hate-filled messages. Howard Bloom, the expert on the human mind, with us. Howard, what do you think about all these cyber attacks and everything else?
Well, here's the deal. There is actually a new arms race afoot, and it's a race between China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and the USA. Vladimir Putin, you know, 4 days ago unveiled a handful of what were called nightmare weapons that he says will make all of our defenses useless. China upped its military budget a few days ago, 8.1%, and said it is going to outcompete us. We've seen the nukes and missiles that North Korea has tested, and anything North Korea has, Iran can have in months. Meanwhile, North Korea, China, Iran, and Russia have all mounted cyber attacks against us and have all succeeded with no punishment. But the real problem, George, is that we are shooting ourselves in the foot. We are acting as our own worst enemies. It's true that we're outspending our rivals on defense. We outspend China, for example, by more than 3-1. But there's a problem. We're getting less and less bang for the buck. In other words, for every one of our most advanced fighter jets, the F-35s, the Russians can put up 7 stealth fighter jets. 1 against 7 will never win. And for every 1 American development program for a new weapon system, the Russians can afford to develop 150 weapons systems. Yes, the Russians can afford to develop 150 new weapon systems. Jeez. For what it costs us to create 1. Now, how many soldiers could win if the cost of their equipment meant they'd be single-handedly facing 150 equally equipped Russians? You can see the problem at work in the space program. You know, I run the Space Development Steering Committee, mm-hmm. which Buzz Aldrin conned me into many years ago. Huh. And the space program uses military procurement methods. So NASA plans a really big rocket called the Space Launch System, the SLS. NASA started on the SLS in roughly 2008, 10 years ago. The total development cost is estimated to be $30 billion. What's more, the cost for each SLS launch is expected to be over $1 billion. Let me repeat that, over $1 billion for just one launch, and the SLS rocket has never flown. Meanwhile, SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, flew its first really big rocket, the Falcon Heavy, a month ago. The Falcon Heavy cost less than $1 billion to develop, and it cost $90 million per flight. In other words, you could fly 11 Falcon Heavies for the cost of one NASA SLS rocket launch, and you could develop 30 entire new space vehicles for the cost of developing the space launch system. Now look, if you send our pilots and warriors into battle against 7-1 odds, you are dooming Americans to lose. You are killing American boys and girls. no matter how much you increase America's military budget. The greatest enemy of America may be its bloated defense companies, companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and Northrop Grumman, and the second biggest enemies may be the Pentagon generals who stuff money into the defense companies' wallet. It is time to get lean, mean, and smart. It's time to learn from Elon Musk.
Let's see if they pull it off. Howard, thank you. Howard's website, of course, linked up at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Remote Indonesian villagers who were becoming increasingly fearful that a shapeshifter was hiding out in their community killed a very rare tiger because they thought it harnessed the supernatural powers. The bloodied carcass of the critically endangered big cat was photographed hanging from beams covering a public gathering space. Stephen Hawking, the physicist, says he knows what happened before the dawn of time. It's the biggest question in the universe. What happened before the Big Bang? Now the world-famous physicist Stephen Hawking says he's got the answer. He says the boundary condition of the universe is that it has no boundary, he says. In other words, there is no time before time began. Its time was always there. It was just different. It was distorted along another dimension, always getting closer to, but never becoming nothing. So there, never was a Big Bang that created something from nothing. Now, what does that all mean? I have no idea. It's as confusing as it gets. Let's check in with what's going on in the skies. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. Do you know what Stephen Hawking was saying, Steve?
Well, kind of, George. I mean, it's a long story made very short. Time was twisted before time began. And if you look at regular time moving to the right, they're talking about time moving on the vertical direction and that it was all a twisted state. But that's the stuff of a whole nother radio show, don't you think?
I think so, too. What do we have this week?
Well, George, more of Unlocking the Secrets of the Universe. Another great week, not only with Stephen Hawking talking about what happened before what happened. We find astronomers here in Arizona and Australia actually being able to detect the signals of when they think starlight began. If you take the 13.5 billion year constant as the beginning of the Big Bang, the universe was extremely cold about 400,000 years after the Big Bang. Simply this, it was a universe that was in a big vacuum. Around it was this cosmic explosion, the remnants of the explosion. It was simply cold with neutral hydrogen gas. These astronomers have detected the first glimmers through radio telescopes, get a load of this, an antenna the size of an actual backyard table, and this is done in the most amazing way. Think of it this way. They're hearing or detecting signals as if you were hearing a hummingbird's wings throughout a fierce hurricane. That's how faint this infinitesimal signal is. What does it mean? It means that there's something going on with stellar star creation much earlier than we probably thought, and that this mysterious thing called dark matter, which makes up 27% of the universe, may have played a role. Finally, in the live sky, George, things that people can actually put their fingers on, so-called in the sky. Folks, look to the west just after sunset this week. A beautiful, George, conjunction of both the planet Venus, now emerging from sunlight, about 20 minutes after sunset, and Mercury. On Sunday, they were about a degree apart. They'll continue to get brighter and higher. It's an amazing time as we begin March 2018. Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies and email me at drsky@cox.net for great things about the sky, aviation, space, and weather.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. Up next, Survive Like a Spy, Jason Hansen back with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jason Hansen back with us, a former CIA officer, security specialist, successful contestant on ABC's reality show Shark Tank. Hansen teaches citizens to defend themselves at his spy escape and evasion school. He has been interviewed by major media outlets for his security expertise, including the Wall Street Journal, Fox News, the Huffington Post. Lives in Cedar City, Utah with his family. His latest book is called Survive Like a Spy. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, George. I appreciate it.
Looking forward to this. It's a great time to learn this, isn't it?
It is. Unfortunately, yes. I mean, the world is getting more crazier each day, as you know.
You know, I keep thinking, in addition to everything we're going to talk about, that poor student who was trapped in North Korea, why he went there in the first place is beyond me, but the 22-year-old and warm beer, and he comes back with brain damage and he ends up dying. I mean, what the heck happened to the guy?
Well, as you said, you know, why was he there in the first place? One of my favorite phrases that a buddy of mine who's also ex-CIA says is spying on is common sense on steroids. So obviously common sense would teach you to avoid those bad places, you know, first off.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as you teach safety, what do you see as the single most important aspect of that?
Well, the single most important aspect is getting away from this technology and unplugging yourself. So still so many people have no idea what's going on around them, and that's why they get mugged going out into a parking lot, or that's why they have a home invasion because, you know, they haven't put any locks or they're sitting there sucked in front of their computers or their TVs. So far too many people are zombies, and they just need a lure to unplug.
Well, they need to unplug in a big way, too. And have you found, Jason, that the situation is getting worse, not better for people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to realize, well, you already know this, the generation coming up, you know, there are kids these days who have never been born without the Internet. You know, they have no idea what it's like not to be staring at an iPad or a cell phone. And that's the scary part, is most people could never imagine not walking across the street while being able to text their friends, which, of course, we know is very dangerous.
You've used a lot of stories in this new book, Survive Like a Spy. Did you have to get CIA approval for that?
I did. It was a very long
really?
CIA approval. So I had to submit this manuscript to the agency. It took about 6 months for them to review. And luckily, the agency has always been really good to work with, but they send me back stuff, a bunch of redacted pages in black, and I say, okay, can I use this word, or can I say this story? And it's yes and no and yes and no. So after all was said and done, there were only about 3 to 4 pages that were fully redacted, which wasn't bad at all for a complete book.
Now, I mean, why did you need their permission?
Well, because when you work for the agency and you have your top secret security clearance, you sign a secrecy agreement. So I was with the agency from 2003 to 2010. And when you join the agency, you sign that. And then when you leave the agency, they kindly remind you, hey, remember this agreement you signed? You're required to go through us, you know, for any books you write or any manuscripts. And if you don't, by the way, we're going to send the Justice Department after you.
Well, they probably would they not?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, so this is more speculation. I just want to say this up front, but I've heard that absolutely they will send you to the Justice Department and try and bankrupt you if you're not playing by the rules. And, of course, I do want to play by the rules because I'm not going to release any classified information. And like I said, I had about 3 to 4 pages redacted. And to me, I thought it was completely normal information. I didn't realize it was classified, and I would want to make sure that that stuff didn't get out.
A good point. Now, there are a couple stories you talked about, the CIA kidnapping a narco-terrorist. Tell us that story. What happened?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad people in this world, and there was a guy who was a narco-terrorist, and he was flooding the United States with a lot of drugs. And one of the huge misconceptions that's out there about the agency in general is that once you realize, okay, hey, this is a drug dealer, we're going to get him off the streets, that the next week you're going and throwing a bag over his head and that's it. But kidnapping, taking someone's freedom, is obviously a huge deal. So you have to spend months and months and months, sometimes years, tracking down this person. You have to confirm their identity. So you've got to have some kind of fingerprint sample. You've got to have some kind of hair sample. So even though you can sit there and stare at that person and say, yes, that's our drug dealer, the agency still makes you confirm it. Then once you've confirmed it, obviously you've got to plan the snatching and grabbing, which can be very dangerous because this drug dealer, and most drug dealers in particular, are surrounded by a lot of bodyguards with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just walk up to them and say, hey, hop in that van. So the best way to grab somebody is to use a distraction. And in this particular story in the book, the distraction was a fake car accident. So 2 cars smashed in front of each other near where this drug dealer was at. Obviously, all the bodyguards, everybody turned their head to look at this car accident. And when they did that, the agency moved in, grabbed this guy, and took him somewhere.
Jeez,
I'll just leave it at that.
And I was going to say, what did they do with him afterwards?
Well, they just take him and they fly him out of the country, and the rest is up to your imagination.
So he's never seen from again, is he?
He's not dealing drugs anymore. He's not, you know, flooding the schools with drugs. So, yeah, he's off the streets.
Interesting tech. Now, I've always heard, Jason, and tell me what you've heard, that after we went into Afghanistan, that we increased the poppy seed production, which is used for heroin, and that we're controlling it. We've got soldiers guarding the fields, and that it's run by the CIA. Can you confirm that?
You know, unfortunately, I can't. I've heard that story. I've heard, you know, both versions. But anything I say will be pure speculation and or a lie, so I have no knowledge of that. I know the agency does things to, what's the word I'm looking for here, to get money and to help. I'm trying to dance around here because, like I said, I am speculating. But the agency does things, kind of works with the devil, so to say, at times, if it's beneficial to the United States government. So if that's true, that will be a, you know, an instance of doing a deal with the devil just to, you know, get what they need in country.
I mean, I've read accounts of what they tried to do to get to Castro. I mean, trying to hire the mob to do it, other people trying to put things in his cigars, and an exploding seashell when he went scuba diving, all kinds of weird things.
Well, I mean, the beauty of the U.S. government is they get to do things that you and I would go to jail for. So if they think it'll help the country, they're allowed to break the law where the, you know, normal citizen like us can.
Now, let's talk about just general kidnapping. Most people don't have to worry about getting kidnapped for ransom money or anything like that. That happens, but most people don't have to worry about it. But what I think they have to worry about, being stalked, some abductor, some sicko, that happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it happens all the time. We actually deal with a lot of women who are trying to escape abusive husbands or abusive boyfriends. And so, you know, once you're in my business, you realize, and the best, nicest way I can call them is losers.
Yeah.
How many losers are out there? And all of a sudden, you know, a girl breaks up with them and they just start going after them and stalking them and sitting in their driveway and all this crazy stuff. So I think one of the biggest things that anybody being stalked needs to realize is obviously call the police, get a paper trail, but stop communicating immediately. And that's hard for most people to do. So when some stalker is sending you emails or texting you or calling you on the phone all the time, you want to pick it up and tell them to go away. Or you want to, you know, reply back to the text and say, leave me alone. But every time you do that, because they're psychotic, they think to themselves, hey, Julie really loves me because she texted me back.
Right.
They don't care what the words are, even if it's, I hate you, psycho, leave me alone. To them, that means, yes, that means they want me to keep doing this.
Will a restraining order do anything?
No, restraining orders are pointless. I mean, it's a worthless piece of paper. And the difficult thing that you never know is it going to be the trigger? Meaning, is that the thing that's going to set them off to show up at your doorstep and, you know, put a gun to your chest? So it's really a fine line because it's always on a case-by-case basis.
Jason, if somebody ends up picking someone up, what have they done? Have they studied them? Have they watched them for a while? What's the method here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, agency, when they're trying to get people, surveillance is the key. And unfortunately, bad guys can do the exact same thing as the good guys. So it's not hard to watch people these days. I mean, if they know where you live, they can see what time you go to work. They can see what time you go to the gym, you go to Starbucks. They can watch your Facebook page to see whatever you posted. So people are, you know, it's easier to track someone. Plus, and we've had these cases with women we worked with, is they've had some GPS devices put on their cars, and they didn't realize it until later. So then somebody knows exactly where you're at any time of the day. So tracking people these days is a piece of cake.
Wow, it's just bizarre the way all this happens. Now, let's say a woman is leaving her office. It's late. She's walking through the parking lot where her car is. Not a lot of people around. What should she be aware of?
Well, first, she should be prepared. So I'm a big gun guy. And I say, hey, you know, make sure you have a gun. Make sure you're trained in it, obviously, so you know how to use it. But a lot of women I'm working with, they say, hey, I don't want a gun. So
right.
The next best thing is I tell them to get a taser or a stun gun flashlight. Because that zapping noise will scare the heck out of a lot of people. Plus, if you've ever been tased, and I have, it hurts like a son of a gun. So when they're heading out there, make sure you can access that gun or that taser. And then, of course, have your head up. Make sure one of your hands is free. So if you're going out with five bags and your hands are full, that means you can't access your gun. You can't access your taser. And then slowly walk out there. So you can take in your surroundings. You can see if anything seems out of place. All of us have that sixth sense. So when that hair raises on the back of our neck, we know something's wrong. When that happens, clearly go back inside. So it's, you know, it's, again, it's several things about being prepared in the first place with a way to defend yourself.
All right, Jason, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and talk more about your work, Survive Like a Spy. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. And if you've had a situation where you were stalked or somebody tried to abduct you or something, check in with us, plus your questions. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Our special guest tonight, Jason Hansen. His latest work is called Survive Like a Spy. We'll take your calls next hour with him and your stories as well. And I can't wait to get into some of these other things he's been working on. Truly remarkable. Live stage shows coming up. Salt Lake City, Scottsdale, Arizona, Las Vegas. I'll tell you all about all of them. But the most immediate one is this Saturday in Salt Lake City, Utah. I can't believe it already as we roll into March here. Saturday night, Salt Lake City at the Janae Wagner Theater. Three special guests, ufologist Nick Pope, the man who died a couple times, lived to talk about it, Danyon Brinkley, and ancient technology expert Jason Martell. Jason, I'm going to look forward to meeting you there, my friend, but
yes.
This is going to be exciting.
It's going to be a great time, George. Thank you for the invite. I'm excited to get to kind of dive into everyone's aware of the modern disclosure, but what led up to that? And there's a whole bunch of ancient technology, even going back to, you know, Wernher von Braun and researching Newtonian physics. What about non-Newtonian physics? And they were looking into all these ancient cultures back in the early 20s and 30s, Germans, Nazis, unfortunately. All of that reverse engineering led into the modern disclosure. But that also is a very interesting topic around ancient technology. Where does it all go? Why don't we find it today? Maybe they scooped it all up.
And it's going to be interactive, Jason, so the audience is going to have an ability to talk to you and ask you questions during the event. So I'm looking forward to it, my friend, and I'll see you in a few days.
See you soon, George. Looking forward to it.
Jason Martell, and of course we'll be doing some songs, live band and everything, and a special tribute to law enforcement and our veterans as well. Don't miss out. First of all, you can go to coasttocoastam.com, click events at the top of the homepage. That'll get you straight to the website for Salt Lake City. But if you don't have a computer, call their box office in the morning at 801-355-2787. It's the Janae Wagner Theater, those of you who live in the greater Salt Lake City area. Then Scottsdale, Arizona, April 21st. Those tickets are going like crazy. Virginia G. Piper Theater. That is available, again, going to coasttocoastam.com, click events there. And then on June 9th at the Silverton Casino in Las Vegas, yep, we're going to be there with our partners, KXNT Radio. We're looking forward to that. Phone number, 702-263-7777, hit #4, or go to coasttocoastam.com, click events at the top of the homepage. And welcome back to Coast. Jason Hansen with us. His book, Survive Like a Spy, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Jason, of course, in this day and age, people are also subjected to cyber threats. If you can tell us a little bit about what they are and how people can fight back.
Yeah, cyber threats are huge. I mean, that's one of the biggest dangers that people face just because it's so easy to do when somebody, you know, halfway across the world can suck out your information. I'd say probably one of the major ways these days is just public Wi-Fi. So they use what's called a man-in-the-middle attack. And if you go to a place like Starbucks, try and get on their Wi-Fi, you'll see the typical Starbucks Wi-Fi that you're supposed to click on.
Mm-hmm.
But right below it, you may see something that says Starbucks 1 or Starbucks 2. And that's a fake one. But if you click on it, try and enter your information, it'll still allow you in. But then the criminals have access to everything you're typing.
Wow.
Essentially an open book.
And where are they? Are they in Starbucks? Or are they outside? Where are they?
So they can set up anywhere. I mean, these guys, they just got to be close enough to get your Wi-Fi connection. So they can be sitting in the Starbucks because obviously they blend in. You know, they can be in a hotel lobby because, you know, everybody going to hotels is logging on to the hotel Wi-Fi. Probably the best thing you can do, and it's not expensive at all, is to get a VPN, which stands for Virtual Private Network. And if somebody just goes on the internet and searches VPN, there's a lot out there, but you can download it, and then it encrypts what's going on. So, for instance, I was on an airplane today. The airplane Wi-Fi is obviously wide open and very easy for attack, but I use my VPN. That way my information is encrypted and I don't have to worry about criminals essentially reading my email.
Jeez. Now, what about the possibility, too, of cyberbullying? How do you fight back on that when most of these people are anonymous?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to the same thing with stalking. So one, report it, you know, at least have a paper trail, go to the local police, and then two, ignore it. So I'm actually working with someone right now who is being cyberbullied, and it happens to be a woman. And I just kept telling her, you've got to ignore it, meaning shut down your Facebook accounts. If you have Twitter or whatever, you know, the latest social media craze is, shut down the account, stop reading it, because obviously it's incredibly psychologically damaging when you read these things, and you've just got to ignore it. That way you got to ignore a bully and not keep paying attention to them.
What about the kids? You as a parent, we're concerned about our children, and what if they're subjected to stuff like this and they don't tell you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got four kids, so obviously want to make sure they're protected. And it comes down to stuff that we know what to do, but more and more parents these days don't, and that's having only one computer in an accessible area where everybody can see it. I mean, it's like, you know, how I remember is you have a computer in the family room, mom and dad can watch you, they can make sure, you know, you're not going to sites you shouldn't, but they can also see who you're talking to. And I think more and more parents are trying to be the cool parents these days or too laid back. But you've got to watch your kids to make sure that, you know, some horrible person isn't bullying them or some horrible person isn't trying to lure them in to, all the pedophiles and all that crazy stuff.
A couple of years ago, I went to Mexico to see a buddy of mine who got married. And you can Google George Nori kidnapped in Mexico. It almost happened, Jason. As I was leaving the hotel to go back to the airport, we solicited an airport or a van that was by the hotel, and it was a shuttle van. And the driver was, of course, foreign and very nervous looking and sweaty looking, but I thought nothing of that. And as we're going to the airport in Cancun, he's starting to really get nervous, talking on a two-way, not a phone, but a two-way with somebody else, and they seem to be yelling at each other. All of a sudden, his van breaks down in a seedy area of town, and it was horrible. And cars are starting to show up, like his buddies, and I'm going, this is not good. So I reach for the door latch by the window. I pull it up. It's been sawed off, so I can't get out. I grab my bags from the back and then got out the front door. Some young kid was driving by. I waved a $100 bill at him, U.S., and he stopped. And I said, I need to go to the airport. And he says, okay, man. And I jump in, and I'm gone. Now, after the fact, Homeland Security apparently got involved. And what they claimed was they were going to, like, ATM me to death until it was, you know, wiped out, which probably would have taken 2 days. But, I mean, what a scary situation. I don't want to go back there.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you did everything actually perfect. I mean, you should have been a spy, George. First, Mexico is incredibly dangerous. I will not go there these days, and there's no amount of money. I mean, I get people who call me, and they want me to go train down there, and I say, absolutely not. You know, you fly up to me because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I mean, people I know go there often, and they say, no, it's not going to happen. Eventually, they almost have some kind of kidnapping attempt. But what you did was perfect, because one of the things I teach people is when you're traveling overseas, have cash on you, especially a $100 bill, because in an emergency, if you shove that in somebody's face, I don't care who they are, they're going to grab it and they're going to help you. But again, it goes back to what we talked about when you first we got on today about the North Korea kid who went over there and unfortunately ended up dying.
The U.S. kid, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, thank you. The U.S. kid who went to North Korea. Is try and avoid the dangerous places. Obviously, you don't want to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, North Korea, but even Mexico, like I said, nothing's going to get me there these days. I don't care how much you try and pay me.
See, in my case, I'm convinced that somebody at the hotel who may have, you know, Googled me and found out who I was and what I did, notified somebody else, and I think it was a setup. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, international hotels, they have spotters sitting in the lobby. So if it's a popular hotel for American tourists, because everybody thinks Americans are rich, whether that's not, you know, true
right.
or not. So if you're an American, you show up in this hotel, they either have spotters sit in the lobby who watch you check in, watch you and follow you somewhere, or else it's an inside job, which a lot of times it is. So that's one of the many reasons you never put your stuff in the hotel safe, because they all have the combo. But also the guy checking you in can say, hey, man, that guy's wearing a Rolex, or that wife, you know, has a big ring on her finger. And then he'll call his buddies and say, hey, they're in this room, or, hey, he asked me about dining at XYZ restaurant. So I think you're 100% right that the whole thing was a setup.
Wow. People just need to be careful. Now, what about the CIA and the recruitment process? I mean, did Elvis really belong to the CIA? I keep hearing those rumors.
That is a great question. I'll let you know when I find out.
All right.
You know, the recruitment process varies. Most people, and again, this isn't the sexy answer, you know, apply, go through the very long process. I mean, it took me 12 months. Because you've got to get polygraphed. You got to have the medical exam. You got to have a psychological exam. They got to do the background check. So that's the traditional way and how the vast majority of people go through. And then there's the small percentage who, you know, are Harvard graduates and speak 17 languages and are, you know, brilliant mathematicians. And unfortunately, I'm not any of those. So there's a very small percentage who meet that, you know, that exact recruitment the agency's looking for.
Tell me a bit about your about on Shark Tank, of course, where you talked about your organization, Spy Escape and Evasion School.
Yeah, Shark Tank was very well for me. It was an incredible blessing. I've always told people that I'm very good at what I do in the safety and survival world and keeping people safe, but I'm not the business expert. So I went on there trying to look for somebody who could teach me how to run a business better and how to grow the business, because I love what I do and obviously want to teach more people. And I ended up getting a deal with Damon John, turned out to be a super nice guy and down to earth. And so it worked out very well for me and obviously got me publicity on a, you know, ABC TV show that I certainly couldn't afford myself.
You talk about having some apparatuses. What is a tactical pen? What is that?
So a tactical pen is one of my favorite self-defense tools. And basically what I like to say is it's a pen on steroids. So it's a regular writing pen, you know, you can carry it around in your pocket, in your briefcase, and write with it, but it's made of a much harder metal, and it's got a point on the end. So let's say you were in a car, went over a bridge, and you're sinking, you could smash a window out with it, but also you could smash somebody else with it. So, you know, we talked about protecting women who, you know, are walking around late at night. Guns are great, tasers are great, but also down the line is if you didn't have any of that, most of us are still going to carry a pen. So you can walk around with a pen in your hand, meaning I can't walk around with a gun in my hand. I can't walk around with a knife in my hand, but I can carry a pen. That way, if somebody does attack me, I can fight the guy off with it. And we actually have students who have fought drug dealers off with a tactical pen who was trying to attack him at a gas
station. Wow. It's like James Bond all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
You talk about dead drops, which are a part of USB drives, right?
Yeah. So dead drops are how agency personnel communicate with assets overseas. So it's not like if you're trying to meet somebody, you say, hey, at 3 p.m., be at the McDonald's, and let's talk about how we're trying to steal Russian secrets or Chinese secrets. So dead drops are a communication device, and they could be anything. You can obviously share information by a USB drive. You can share information by, you know, just pad and paper kind of thing. If you are using USB drives, and in general for the public, make sure it's encrypted. Is there a great encrypted USB drives? And personally, I've got a USB drive which has, you know, my driver's license information, my birth certificate, if you have any stock or banking information. And that's something you want to have in like a bug out bag or somewhere in your house where if you've got to evacuate in 5 minutes, you can grab that encrypted USB. That way you have all your personal information on it.
It's amazing. How did you get involved in all of this, Jason?
Well, I guess I watched too many James Bond movies, and I like playing in the woods too much. I was an Eagle Scout, so I spent a lot of times outdoors, a lot of times shooting guns. And I think growing up, I just never wanted a real job. I didn't see myself pushing papers at some place for 40 years. So I'm born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. I sent out a lot of applications. and the CIA and the Secret Service just happened to offer me a job, and I went with the agency because I thought it would be a more exciting adventure.
How do you feel about raising the semi-automatic or the assault rifle limit from 18 to 21?
I think it's a terrible idea.
Really? Tell
me
why.
Yeah, I do.
By the way, I'm a concealed weapons permit holder. So
I mean, I'm a big gun guy. I got admittedly more guns than the average person and more guns than I'll ever know what to do with. But it's, again, it's the Second Amendment. It's protecting our freedoms. They're never going to change my mind on that. And so...
But should an 18-year-old have those weapons?
Yeah, because, again, a rifle is a rifle, meaning if you can go buy a shotgun, you can go buy a rifle, and if they pass a background check, it goes back to it's such a small percentage of the population. So, yes, there are mentally ill people out there. They're going to do horrible things. And I was listening to somebody who said, hey, you know, Timothy McVeigh, we didn't, after the Oklahoma bombings, we didn't ban fertilizer. So evil people will always find a way. And at 18, many people are buying rifles for hunting. You learn how to shoot. You learn how to protect your family. So I'm very opposed to anything that's hurting the Second Amendment or our freedoms.
How do these kids slip through the cracks, though? I mean, in this case, I think law enforcement screwed up down there in Parkland, Florida. They were called to his house a zillion times.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I can't even remember the real number. You know, it was like 40 or 50 or something incredibly high. And, yeah, that was an issue with law enforcement, obviously blowing it. But, I mean, we had the Vegas shooter, and, you know, how do they slip through the cracks? It's because, you know, you have to pass a background check. There are so many people, and, you know, so many people when I'm watching the news, oh, they're, you know, background checks don't find anything. It's a federal background check that's pretty darn thorough. However, people snap. You know, when you hear the stories of the mother drowning or four children or whatever, all these horrific things, is people who one day are seemingly normal do horrible things. And, you know, unless it's like one of those sci-fi movies where we start reading the future and, you know, sucking out their brain information to put them in jail ahead of time, we're just never going to know. Because if people have a clean background at the time, they should be able to buy a gun.
Well, what happened in Vegas, too, the mistake there was they needed to implement some kind of rule for house cleaning that if there's a do not disturb sign for more than 24 hours on a door, you better go in there to make sure the guy's not dead.
Yeah, and that's correct. I mean, like everything else, unfortunately, after these horrific incidences, we learn more, we implement more stuff. But, again, you can't, I mean... people snap, and it's such a small percentage, and I don't know how we're going to prevent that.
How would you recommend, and what would you recommend to people to prepare themselves in this very bizarre world we're living in right now?
Well, since we're talking about active shooters right now, I'd say one of the toughest things to learn is you have to do what the Israelis do. So the Israelis, they're surrounded by people who hate them. The Palestinians are always trying to stab them or shoot them, and they rush people. So if you hear a story about, hey, some guy pulls out a knife, five people have rushed him and jumped him, disarmed him. And that's what we need to shift the mindset to when it takes training. So if somebody walks into a school or a hotel, a movie theater.
Pulls out a gun.
Right. Normally, everybody fans out and starts running away.
Right.
Which makes it very easy for the shooter just to start shooting you in the back.
Yeah, nobody's coming at him. They're all running.
That's the mind shift that needs to change. Is you got to rush the shooter.
Well, you need heroes. You need heroes to do that, Jason, don't you?
Correct. You're absolutely right.
I mean, because, a lot of people will hide under desks and run. But you're right. Five or six guys should rush them. I don't know what happened on those planes during 9/11 on that fateful night and that fateful day on those four planes. But in some cases, I think some of them were rushed. But I'm not sure they all were.
Yeah, I mean, we know the one in Pennsylvania, the one that crashed in the Pennsylvania field, they rushed them because they knew what was happening. They got the word from,
right.
I guess,
they had heard about the other planes.
Correct, I don't know about the others.
All right, Jason, stay with us. We're going to come back for a final hour to go with you. His book, Survive Like a Spy. We will take phone calls, questions, real-life stories. Have you been stalked? Has anything happened to you? Share that story with us as well. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Do follow us on Twitter. And you can send me an email at george@coasttocoastam.com.